You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Welcome to HealthCetera, brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. I'm Eve Adler, one of the producers of HealthCetera, reporting to you from Los Angeles, California. Today, I am here with Dr. Shion Roy. Shy, as he is referred to sometimes, is considered an expert on health policy and is on the board of trustees for both the California Medical Association and the LA County Medical Association. Shy is a cardiologist at Harbor UCLA Medical Center, has done extensive research on cardiac imaging, and last year became a college faculty member teaching an introductory to health policy course. So welcome to HealthCetera, Shy.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. So let's start by telling us about the type of patients that you serve here in Los Angeles.
Sure. So LA County is the largest county in the country, and Harbor UCLA is the second largest county hospital in LA County. And so we're located in Torrance, California, and we serve exclusively uninsured and underinsured patients. So if patients come in through our emergency department with insurance, they tend to be transferred out to a private hospital, and we concentrate really on uninsured and underinsured patients. The majority of our patients are minorities. A large portion of our patients are undocumented patients. So we serve a very diverse group of patients.
And what type of issues do you see the patients coming in with? What type of health problems that do you see them coming in with, first of all? And also, what are problems that you may see with changes in the Affordable Care Act?
So we see a different type of population than would be seen in, say, a private hospital here in Santa Monica, where we're located. We see diseases at younger stages in life, because we see a lot of people who are coming to Harbor as their first contact for medical care at the ages of 50 and 60, people who've never really had medical care before. And so they have waited for an end stage of their disease before reporting to medical care. So as a cardiologist, for example, there's a disease called mitral valve stenosis. And mitral valve stenosis is almost definitely always caused by rheumatic heart disease. And Americans in this day and age don't get rheumatic heart disease because if they get sick when they're young, they get treated with antibiotics and they never get rheumatism. But down in Latin America, in a lot of the impoverished countries in particular, people still get rheumatic heart disease. And so we see mitral stenosis, whereas there's a lot of cardiologists in the United States of America who probably never see mitral stenosis, and I see it a couple times a week probably.
Well, and so what made you decide to work with the population you work with?
So I did my cardiology training there at Harbor UCLA. We have a great training program there, and it's a very, very satisfying place to work. I feel like I can make a difference in the lives of patients who have medical needs that wouldn't otherwise be met unless they came to our county hospital. I also am able to teach. I have medical students, residents, fellows, and I like to teach our trainees to take pride in the compassionate care that we give to people who otherwise might not get it, in hopes that in their careers they look for the same thing.
So when we think about the Affordable Care Act, how has it, first of all, impacted your hospital, where you work, the patients you see, the care they get, and how would possible changes impact the patients that you work with?
So we see a large number of Medi-Cal patients. A lot of our patients are uninsured, but there are a large number that are also underinsured with Medi-Cal type insurance coverage. So with the Affordable Care Act in the state of California, Medi-Cal coverage has really expanded. And for those of you who don't live in California, Medi-Cal is California's Medicaid program. And so the Medi-Cal program has expanded more than a million people. It's been a large number, and a lot of those patients come to Harbor. And so in some senses, it benefits Harbor because now Harbor gets reimbursed to some degree for the care that it provides. Whereas 10 years ago, Harbor got reimbursed for very little care that it provided because most of the patients were absolutely uninsured and it was reliant on public funding from the county. But now there's a higher degree of patients with Medi-Cal, so that helps Harbor to some degree. With the Affordable Care Act, more patients have insurance, including Medi-Cal, and some of those patients get navigated to other hospitals as well. So our outpatient population has come down to some degree, which is good for our hospital because we're, particularly in the outpatient arena, we're a resource-poor hospital. So we give the community standard of care in the emergency room and for inpatient services. But for outpatient services, I'd argue with the wait times, et cetera, we're not up to the community standard. So to some degree, having a relief of patient burden as outpatients helps us and helps us better treat the existing patients that we have.
So where do patients then go for outpatient type of treatment that come to Harbor?
So Harbor has full outpatient facilities, okay. And then we have contracting other county facilities that we refer for primary care. And so Harbor is a part of a larger network of county facilities. But Harbor itself has the full scope of specialty and primary care, outpatient and inpatient facilities.
So what do you think are going to be possible changes, although none of us really know,
right,
in terms of the Affordable Care Act that may impact the care that you give?
Sure. You know, the Affordable Care Act, some of the criticisms of the Affordable Care Act, and now I'm speaking more broadly away mm-hmm. from my patient population, mm-hmm. has been the premiums have gone up. And I think, personally, that the Affordable Care Act would have worked better with a public option in the state exchanges. And so a lot of the state exchanges have a lack of competition, and there is no real mechanism for the government or public entities to drive or increase competition. And having a public option on state exchanges would allow public entities to drive competition to some degrees by setting premiums at a certain level, et cetera, and offering coverage with reasonable deductibles, et cetera. And I was hoping that that would be the next progression of the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act offered universal health care and relieved the amount of uninsured patients in the United States. And I was hoping that the next step would be a public option on the state exchanges. That seems less likely to happen now with the new administration and Republican control of the Senate and Congress. I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's possible that we go back to a system that we had 10 years ago with less government influence, but a system that left almost 50 million people uninsured before the Affordable Care Act. I'm hoping that the Affordable Care Act, big parts of it will be kept in place, including the exchanges with measures developed to increase competition on the exchanges. I'm also hoping that patients with pre-existing conditions remain insured. There's been mixed signals from the administration and Republican leadership in terms of that. Even in the first couple of weeks of the administration, there's been mixed signals on some of these things. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if the president and in Congress also are on the same page and if they know what's going to happen. So we'll have to see. But I think it's critical that we offer universal health care where everybody has access to good community standard healthcare. And that would take improvement in our healthcare system because I work at a place where not everything is at the community standard.
Mm. You know, you have this other side that you do, which is very active in terms of education. I've heard about you also being an advisor to certain student clubs and teaching about health policy. So when you teach, let's say, the course that you teach, What aspects of health policy come up a lot, or do you find your students are really concerned about?
Well, when I teach a pretty broad health policy class, mm-hmm. and I like to start at the beginning on how is our healthcare system doing and how did it come into play. And there's very clear data showing that Americans don't live as long as many of the people in comparable first world countries.
Yes.
Yet we spend almost, in most cases, twice as much money as every other country on our healthcare system. So there's something wrong there, you know. And how long people live is not entirely related exclusively to a healthcare system, but it's a fairly good measure of it. We're headed in the wrong direction on both sides. It's a fairly flat but growing curve on life expectancy that's not as steep as some other countries. We are a very steep curve going up in terms of money being spent. So when I teach health policy, it takes a long time to get through the basics of what our healthcare system does. It's not simple. And that's one of the problems with our healthcare system. It's complexity. When bureaucracy and systems get overly complex, it becomes really more difficult to modify them, to adjust them. And we've seen some of this with the Affordable Care Act. It's a really complex system. And the Affordable Care Act was put in place. And I would argue that many of the people who voted on the Affordable Care Act, either yay or nay, didn't understand all of the complex outcomes from it, just because it's hard to predict and very few people in our country understand the complexities of our healthcare system. So when I teach students, I try to simplify our complex system. So in the future that, you know, this is going to be a struggle for the next 50 years. I think healthcare administration is going to be something that is going to be modified endlessly for the next 50 years. And so these students are going to be coming into play, and I'm hopeful to impact some people to look at it in a certain way.
And I can relate to what you're talking about in terms of teaching nursing students about why is the infant mortality rate so high in the United States,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And why does healthcare cost so much?
Mm-hmm.
And trying to talk about, well, what are certain variables about that? You know, is it that maybe infants that wouldn't have survived in other countries,
right,
or in other places are surviving here, and yeah. and that increases the healthcare dollars? I think there's a lot involved. So what do you say to your students who want to have some type of impact on what's going on right now? What do you advise?
Well, you know, in terms of having impact right now, I think just getting engaged. I think it's important for students to get a good education when they're in school, really concentrate on school. So here at Santa Monica College, I encourage students to really be attentive to their schoolwork. Outside of that, though, as you're finishing your education, if you want to be engaged, there's so many different avenues to be engaged. We've seen some of the marches. All of those things really, really do make an impact. But to impact, I think marches and those kinds of things impact general broad policy, which is important. I also encourage students to really read the details of policies, because at some point it requires detail-oriented people to modify policy, and I encourage students to really be detail-oriented when they read about the things that they read, and so that they're hyper-educated comparatively to what's even reported broadly in the media.
And I think that's a challenge, too, because everything that we hear is kind of sound bites.
Absolutely.
You know, sound bites of everything. And I saw someone holding up the Affordable Care Act, the actual document, which was, it looked like thousands of pages.
It's at least 1,000 pages.
Right?
Yeah.
And so who really read through all of that and knows all of the details about that, I think is challenging.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think very few of the people who voted on it probably read through it. I'm sure they had a staff member who may have probably read it, but I mean, 1,000 pages is a long, long document. And so, overly complex things often have unintended consequences. And I think the Affordable Care Act was a step in the right direction, but it didn't do everything that President Obama wanted it to do, and the Democrats wanted it to do. And I think it was passed with the intent to have more modifications in the near future. But what wasn't expected was sort of the rightward turn in our democracy with this election, and which may lead to the impeachment of the Affordable Care Act. So we'll see. We'll have to see what happens.
And so tell our audience what's in the future for you. What do you see on the horizon and the work that you do?
Well, I love practicing where I practice, mm-hmm. and I'm looking to have a really continued teaching and treating patients at Harbor-UCLA. I also recently ran for office, Santa Monica College Board of Trustees, and the two things I'm really passionate about are education policy and health policy, and I want to do as much as I can to positively impact health and education policy, both locally, both in the state of California, and broadly nationally as well. So I'll continue to be active in some of the different roles that I have, and push for the things that I believe in.
And what I admired about the campaigns that you have been on is your reaching a younger audience, and just some of the activities that you've had.
I appreciate that. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think it's really important to inspire students to get engaged. I can tell you, I go to a lot of community meetings, and there's a huge age gap, I'm often the youngest person there, and the next oldest person might be, in their 50s, and so there's a huge age gap, and it's really important to inspire and get students involved in these policy issues. Like I told people at Santa Monica College here when I was campaigning, different students, nobody cares about student debt like you do. You know, everybody cares about student debt, but this affects you personally, and nobody is going to advocate for this in the same way as you do, as you accumulate student debt right now at this point in your life. And that goes for a multitude of issues. And so I think it's important to have diversity, whether it's ethnic or age diversity, in public policy forums.
And so why do you think there's this gap? You know, there's this gap that you see happening.
A natural progression of, people are in school and then they have early careers and early families. And so part of it advocacy is time consuming. And so, so some of it might be that it's just a natural progression as you progress in life and you develop more security for yourself and your family, you may have some more time to advocate for the things that you believe in. And that's important. But if you are able to, and not everybody is, but if you are able to, I think it's important to advocate for the things you believe in as soon as you can.
And any advice for our current or future advocates out there in terms of how to get started, the actual policies they're concerned with, any advice you have for them?
You know, getting started is a big part of it. It seems daunting. Where do I start sometimes in any sort of endeavor, in any sort of project? I remember when I was in medical school, people would perseverate about that student who does better than me is reading this book, or this person went to this class and I didn't make it, and am I gonna be behind because of that? And I found out as I progressed through medical school that usually it's just about time. It's usually it doesn't matter the study material, if you really spend time, that's what's important. And I think the same thing with getting started in anything. Sometimes it's not important where you start. It's just about starting and taking that first step. And you'll learn a lot by just taking a first step wherever you take that first step, and then probably progress to something that you enjoy and you find meaningful.
And I think another thing that has struck me about when you've spoken publicly is about how you admire and are in support of education, and how that came from your family and your history.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad's a lifelong college professor. He's a professor at Arizona State University. My wife went from poverty to Harvard Medical School. I come from an immigrant family. You know, education is what lifts people up out of their life circumstances or helps people progress in their life circumstances. And I'm a big believer that education is the key and most meaningful thing in lifting people out of poverty. And so that's, I'm really passionate about that. And I intend to continue to advocate for things that expand educational access to people who don't have it.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eve, for having me.
Thank you. So thank you to Shion Roy for being with us. HealthCetera is streaming online at www.wbai.org, or you can listen to HealthCetera anytime at www.healthmediapolicy.com.